This episode of RFK Refugees is brought to you by Pitch Invaders, the ultimate online apparel destination tailored for the soccer community. Use code VAMOS for an exclusive 15% discount on all purchases at pitchinvadersusa.com. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, RFK Refugees Podcast. Ted here, John here, as John was slightly frozen there on my screen, and that looked a little funky and kind of threw me off, but we move on. John, how you doing, my friend? Hope things
I'm
are
good.
Going well.
I'm not frozen by you, Ted.
Oh, it's, you know, doing okay. It was a rough soccer week. I'm wearing the jersey of the only team I support that managed to pick up anything this weekend, which was FC Heidenheim in a 1-1 draw. Everybody else just disappointment all around. Liverpool lost, DC lost, Spirit lost, Kickers lost. Everybody just carnage. Carnage everywhere you look. How you doing? I hope your weekend was good. I know you were out doing the travel.
I was in Phoenix. I was kind of hoping to see a Phoenix United game at night, but they were on the road to Monterey, so I didn't get a chance to. But I'll tell you, being on the road, I've got to figure out how to like do my job and then also consume these approximately 7,000 hours of soccer content that I'm required to be good at the show. So we'll see how it goes. But I got to see my friend out in Phoenix, got to do some work stuff, and it was not too bad. How about yourself? What did you get into this weekend besides, again, watching all our teams get
back to Richmond to see some friends? And I hung out at home. I refereed a soccer game in the morning, and then it was like one, it basically got back 1 p.m. till, you know, 11, 10, 12 at night. I forget when. I probably have to go back and watch. So going to be...
We like had inverse weekends, you and I.
I hope you're getting some rest this weekend, some much needed rest.
Yeah, well, no, because it's the Spirit home opener. So I'll be live in Audi Field watching the Jabberwockies TRL or what. I don't even know what year, what is time. But yeah, so just, you know, bearing the lead there, we will be here again for the Spirit. I think makes 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row.
Three
I'm not
years
sure.
In a row, yes.
They've been really cool about making sure we had all the access we need. And if you had the opportunity to hear the Andy Sullivan interview last week, go check it out. She's great. She is literally my favorite soccer person to talk to in the universe. And then also, I think we're talking to Ashley Hatch, if not this week, then in the coming week. So
should be.
We got the good spirit stuff for you guys.
Yeah, we do have the good spirit stuff. Well, we're going to get into the game, obviously coming up a little bit later in the show, the 1-0 loss to the Seattle Reign. But first, we got to talk about DC United. 3-1 losers, unfortunately, to Inter Miami. This is a tough pill to swallow. In the fact that maybe kind of a little bit of a come back to earth type mentality with this team. This team is certainly playing. I think the first, 20-25 minutes were excellent. From DC, they were the better side through and through. And this has been sort of a story to follow with Inter Miami is how do you do when Messi's not there? That was probably the biggest miss. I'm sure there were a lot of upset fans and maybe some upset people around the stadium. A lot of Inter Miami shirts. I saw a lot of pink sort of nestled into the stands, but Messi wasn't there. So the team, Inter Miami, basically had a reserve lineup. DC had basically their strongest lineup, minus Ted Cudi-Pietro, who, despite being on the bench last week, was missing. But Lassane says he'll be back. First 20-25 minutes started great. I don't think there's anything you can complain. DC was
no.
The pressure was working. Really sort of the front pressure I noticed. Miami's only goal was just like trying to like relieve that pressure and just play the ball upfield. I will call out probably, I thought the best player on the field was Matthias Glick. He was phenomenal in this game, hitting passes, charging players down, winning the ball in good spots, you know, turning it into transition. But what's starting to become a theme for this team is, you know, maybe a lack of finishing chances. Pirani had a really excellent chance for his first pass to a created shot he's had all year. I thought he was a little bit more active in this game. And I think maybe that's a positive considering where he was.
As I think we said, you and I talked, the bar is on the floor. So basically If he does anything sort of constructive, where you said one chance created, 0.09 XG, 0.04 expected assists. So certainly nothing to write home about, but again, bar floor.
That's kind of surprising on the 0.04. I don't know how that's calculated. Cause I mean the Benteke chance, he gets more power in that ball. He gets a better placement. I mean, that's
really any placement. That was the classic Benteke. Like normally he'll get three chances of that degree and then finish one of them. And then we'll be like, job done. He did a good job. He just did not. That was really an opportunity squandered there on goal. And I wasn't just mad because right before the game, we're going to do 10 seconds of John's betting corner. Right before the game, I had bet. I mean, this would have lost too, but I had a pretty sizable bet on a draw, sizable for me. So we're talking $5. So everybody calm down. I don't have a problem. I avoid that. I see the lineups and I'm like, no way. Balls to the wall. We're scoring goals. I'm putting a goal on Benteke to score. I'm putting a bet on Herrera to assist. I'm betting them to win straight out. And I lost half of my betting roll because I was just like, bet. All of them went the wrong way. So Benteke really should have scored that, not just because he cost me dollars. But to your point, Click was all over the place. And that, you know, we talked about last week when people were saying, maybe he's your 10. He's not. But He is the most effective midfield player by a pretty good stretch. And I don't imagine, you know, I don't know what he wants to do at the end of his contract, but like he's getting better. So as he's been here, it's been an upward path. So I think in a situation where you have some additional forwards besides Benteke that could convert chances and maybe help him out on the scoring side, he becomes even more valuable.
The pass he makes on the goal, and let's talk about the goal, just a beautiful strike from Jared Stroud, but the pass comes from Click. He makes that pass because he is sitting a little bit deeper in the field, and that is a huge strength of his that I feel like you almost negate if you push him up higher in the field, and that's ability to kind of pick out a pass, pick out a long ball, and really hit it with unbelievable accuracy. And I think if you push him up, you kind of lose that because he's going to be closer to goal. Maybe he's looking for the shot. Maybe he's looking for the shorter pass. And I think like you're almost negating a huge aspect of his. It doesn't mean I think Barani should get the run. I think they should, you know, maybe try some other things, try some different things. But I mean, that was just a beautiful ball over the top. Find Stroud. Stroud hits it, probably the shot of his life, into the back of the net. Great goal. DC United's up 1-0, and we think, oh, we're cruising. We're cruising. I mean, for 20, 25 minutes, it was basically all Miami. I mean, all DC.
All one-way traffic. Yep.
Yeah. One-way traffic going this way. Then, you know, Miami are a good team. And I think this was a game, you know, I wish maybe we had gotten them maybe a couple weeks before this, you know, with Messi being out and everything, because, you know, they looked like they had struggled without Messi. They looked a little bit lost. And I think this was a game where they finally maybe started to piece it all together without Messi because, you know, they made some adjustments. I think they started to realize, you know, we need to start hitting this team quick on transition. We need to do switches. So we need to, you know, they're going to try to pressure it and corner us to one side. If we get that switch, you know, then we open up a ton of space. And they started to really go at DC, and DC really kind of started to lose the game. I thought Peltola in particular, I think he maybe gets some criticism for this game. I think he was definitely pushed up, and I felt like because he was pushed up, it suddenly left a huge, huge gap sort of in that midfield because he was trying to pressure because he was, you know, probably told to by Troy the same. So I think maybe there needs to be a little bit better recognition from the team. We know they want to press. We know that's how they're going to be effective, but you also need to, you know, play the ball a little bit on the ground and play a little differently. And I'll get into a little bit the way the team came out in the second half, or I'd say about the first 15 minutes before the entry of Suarez, I actually was pretty encouraged by what I saw because they did sort of shift in how they played. They were not, you know, pressing, going all out. They definitely sort of played a more slow, methodical buildup and still generated some decent chances out of it. So
he only 3 out of 7 for ground duels. Just sort of a non-factor. Zero out of one successful dribbles, 0 out of 1 accurate long balls, 5 passes in the final third. He's typically when things are going well, he is winning a bunch of tackles in the middle of the field. And also, when the game is played through the middle, that happens. But he was being bypassed by crossfield balls much of the game. But when he did feature, he was not able to do what he normally is. But he was by far not the only player having a bit of a struggle of a day. But Bono, yeah. I do want us to call out right before that goal, Alec Bono does what he had done previously in the season, make a ridiculous save off the goal line. DC United unable to clear it out of the 18. Was that the Campana goal, the first one of the game?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah, that he had two chances inside the six and finally got one of them in. But it felt very much they were able to limp into halftime, I believe, 1-1. But it was they woke up right after that goal. It was pretty dramatic. It was very obvious. And you don't know if it's like. I think they were able to pick out weak points on the field. Miami were. I don't think that they had the and DC were unable to adust in the second half. We could talk about all the things that happened along the way, the sort of the controversial components. But you know, I don't know. I would love to hear what Troy thinks this week after having at least take away the long. Be curious this week to see where he's at on that. But it was stark.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, to their credit, they should have had a PK. They should have had an opportunity. Let's get into this. We're starting to see, I think, the rickety dam that is the MLS replacement referees is starting to show major cracks and starting to break. We saw DC was not even the worst of the bunch. Montreal, I think, particularly had a lot of grievances with how the refereeing was going. And I think DC also had some grievances. I'll get into where I think they had grievances and where I think they didn't have grievances.
Montreal played Chicago, right?
They played Chicago, yeah.
So that was the Kellen Acosta win magic goal happened at the end of...
Yeah, Kellen Acosta win magical, great goal, great moment, but definitely marred by, I think, two of the goals looked like they could have been called for offsides, weren't reviewed. And then Chris Brady came all the way out of his box, very clearly handles the ball outside his box, and nothing is called as far as that goes. So the coach for Montreal, I think, had kind of broken down. I think we're starting to see players, coaches, and everybody else kind of start to get a little bit frustrated. There was a quote from Don Garber saying, "We did all, you know, 10,000 fan surveys or whatever, and you know the fans don't really care about this interview." And I'm like, well, that's because things are what they are, and things are fine. Once you kind of shine a spotlight on something, opinions change. And I think we're starting to see the beginnings of that. I hope this gets resolved. This has become Troy, it's no gone comment. On long enough.
Troy did a no comment in the post game, apparently.
He did. He did.
He's not making enough money to pay for the league fines, I think, is his deal. So he's just like, I'm going to keep my money. You guys know what it is.
Yeah, other people can do it. But yeah, no, I think the player, I forget the player, but one of the players was like, we need to figure this out. You know, but and DC, I think, deserves to be very to feel the grievance. You know, one thing that was talked about on the broadcast and several things was, you know, Montreal's weakness off set pieces. And there is very, very clearly I believe it's a free kick. And I'm not sure if he takes it, if it's Click or Santos that takes it. But the ball is whipped in, very dangerous ball, very easily gettable by either Benteke or Dahomey. And Busquets is very clearly grabbing Dahomey's jersey and very clearly prevents him. Vieira takes a look and reviews and decides no penalty. I thought that was an absolutely ridiculous call. It's very clear that Dahomey has an opportunity to go get that ball if he is not held up. He has a clear run and Busquets grabs his jersey. It's evident. It's clear as day. I don't know if. You know, the VAR situation might be like an underrated story this year because I don't know, maybe we have some grievances, but MLS, I feel like before this year has kind of gotten VAR right in a lot of ways. And this year it feels like I think there is a lack of people in the booth. I really think it's just Mark Geiger and then maybe some other person having maybe to watch multiple games and try to do multiple VAR calls. And
that'd be a hilarious reason for why. Like, you know why it took so long? Because I'm doing five things at once, man. Give me a break over here. I got one set of eyes.
I think that's it. I think there is some notion that there are not multiple eyes, more eyes being able to track certain things.
That's funny.
And things are getting lost because that's the only explanation I can give for it. Because it feels like there should have been you know, there should have been calls. You know, that's such a clear and obvious error. I don't know what happened there or what's going on, but it's getting bad. And overall the overall control of the game, I thought was pretty poor. Again, you can just kind of tell, you kind of watch these games. It really doesn't feel like the referees are in control. The coaches are, you know, very clearly not respecting them. And people say, oh, well, you know, it's been bad before. And I'm like, I really think you all need to go back and maybe watch some games from last year. And I guarantee you will not see the same things you're seeing right now. I think DC was missed on a few corner kicks, like just, you know, and even some of the I think it's impacting some of the NWSL games because there was some weird things happening in that game as well, which we'll get into. So, it's getting bad. And I don't know if this is maybe something that finally forces MLS back to the table, but we'll wait and see. It's Jeff Reuter and Pablo Mauro, the only ones really covering it. So
we got somebody in the chat saying, just like Gary Bettman's fan surveys of the mandatory ad boards, you wonder if the commish talked to more fans than the one in his mirror. Yeah, it's very possible that, I mean, we know this is baloney. They don't want to pay, and they're figuring, unless someone like dies in the field or Messi falls and gets, you know, something horrible happens to their most valuable commodity, they think they can just keep on stretching this thing out. And they probably can, to be honest with you. Like we have seen sort of a lack of reactivity and accountability for stuff like that. So, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it. And hopefully that, you know, the things that go against us don't vastly outweigh the things that go in our favor. Sometimes, you know, if it's bad referees, it's bad referees across the board. So,
yeah,
I mean, not necessarily bad referees, but referees that are in over their skis that probably should not be doing these games.
Yeah. And it's painfully evident in a lot of ways that these referees are they're very clearly outmatched. You know, there was a tweet from the Screaming Eagles Twitter account and sort of, I don't know if jokingly, I thought it was kind of a bad tweet. I'm like, these referees aren't, I'm sure they're intimidated. I mean, they didn't think when they started this year they would be refereeing Luis Suarez and Sergio Busquets. So I'm sure this is an intimidation factor. And maybe that plays into, you know, allowing certain things to go, making some different calls. You know, I'm sure it certainly plays into it. But I think outwardly saying that they, you know, were purposely missing calls to allow Inter Miami to win is a little bit ridiculous.
Do you think the PRSA refs are like doing like youth games to stay sharp, like all over these weeks and months?
Well, they might be. They're allowed to do like CCL games. I'm sure we'll see some of them out there for CONCACAF, maybe even Nations League as well, coming up this week. So I mean, really, it's just MLS games. The referee for Spirit was a FIFA official. She had a FIFA badge and everything. So, we'll get into it.
But so Luis Suarez, speaking of overmatched, you have DC United's defense and Luis Suarez in the second half.
Yeah. So again, I would say, you know, until my notes basically stop when Suarez checks in, because I feel like
you were under siege at that point.
Point it was pretty obvious. I for about 47th minute or second half, 63, I thought DC did adjust. I thought they played a little bit better. I thought Patola was dropping a little bit deeper. So they were not really able to effectively press. And so they had to kind of change up how they played. And I thought that was generally a positive thing to see. They looked like they were getting, you know, slower buildup, you know, but they were able to find moments. They were able to find spaces and, you know, really attack. And, you know, they played it long, kind of sort of, you know, direct to Benteke, who, you know, again, despite maybe not getting it on the score sheet, Benteke was still winning pretty much everything in the air. If there was a ball coming to him, he was going to win it. I think the players around him need to do a better job of sort of reading those moments and attacking and, you know, going forward from those moments, taking advantage of it.
Too many balls that he won in the air that went headed down, like where you would assume if you were facing him as he was back to goal, you should know what's going to happen. That's all he does. He wins it all the time. And there were lots of players just standing around, not really getting in the right place, just sort of indicative of a bad day, right? It's just things not going that way.
And you really watch him play. He will, before he jumps, you'll see him kind of glance around. He balls in the air. He'll take two quick glances. He'll figure out where he wants it to go. He wins it. He's going to drop it there. There were a couple of times I think the ball fell right to Dahomey. One of which I thought he turned into a pretty good chance, I think, in the first half that won a free kick. But yeah.
His stats, he was 13 for 17 on aerial duels won, 76%.
That's low for him, too.
It is low for him. That is low for him. But the volume of opportunities is more what I'm speaking to. Like, they know, like, this is the move. I want folks to, like, appreciate that this is like a, this is a cheat code. It's on DC United to figure out the rest of what has to happen around it and the way to maximize it. But this is a unique cheat code in MLS that they have to figure out how to harness, because it will. He'll go on to his next thing and he'll leave, and we will no longer have an all-time GOAT at any statistical thing. He is that at this. He is unstoppable. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
I wish it were goal scoring all the time, but if it's something, that's still a useful attacking attribute that he has.
Yeah. And anyway, Suarez checks in. I think at this point, DC does get, I thought, a pretty decent chance. I think they manage. I think Jared Stroud kind of is able to get the ball out wide. I can't remember much of what happened in the build up. Ball. This is sort of, you know, controversial moment number two. Ball sort of gets played into the middle of the box. I forget the defender that's on the clearance there. I think it might have been Alves. I can't remember who it was, but you know, he swipes at the ball, sort of trying to fall down. The ball does hit his arm. Unfortunately, and this is where I think a lot of fans were saying it's, you know, it's handling, it should have been a PK, it should have been reviewed. There was a camera angle right there. Unfortunately, I think this is one where the referee got it right. They have been very, very, very particular in referee clinics. And, you know, I'll get into maybe another little rant, but IFAB has made it very clear that, you know, any sort of body movement of the arm while kicking the ball, as long as it's not ridiculous, particularly also if you're falling down as well, you know, that hand that's sort of towards the ground is considered completely fine and valid if the ball hits your hand at that point, because you're sort of instinctively going to use that arm to kind of brace your fall when you're making that kick. And also, you know, the kick also comes off his leg and sort of pops up on him into his arm. They've also been pretty clear that that is not, you know, that is not something where you can call a PK. It's been made pretty clear by IFAB on those regards. So I think the referees do get that one right. I think DC probably feels maybe a little bit hard done. And I think, unfortunately for them, they kind of switch off a little bit. I think maybe they think that they have a penalty. Maybe they think it's going to go directly for review. And Inter Miami comes right down the other way on the counter. They're caught up. I believe this may have been off a set play, if I recall correctly. And, you know, we've talked about this as well. Transition moments have killed this team. And Suarez basically goes right into the box and Bartlett fails to pick him up. And it's a header and a goal. They don't come back to review the PK. And it's 2-1 DC. And really, DC's then got their work cut out for him. I really don't think from then on they tried to come up with something. They subbed in, you know, Martin Rodriguez made an appearance.
He is alive. He does. He is allowed to play.
He is apparently allowed to play. We'll get into what's upcoming after this. But you know, he looks like he was able to get in the game, which I think was probably good to see from him, considering his injury last week. But I don't think he did a whole lot. I don't think anybody really did a whole lot.
He was 100% for passing. He was 11 for 11 on passing. So there's
You go.
One little peculiar benefit.
There you go. And then the sort of the dagger goal comes from Luis Suarez. Really unfortunate. Really unfortunate play from Matthias Glick, who, again, we raved about in the first half. We raved about how good he was. He sits back, tries to play a ball, gets, I think Ruiz is the one that steps in and kind of blocks it, or maybe it was Gomez. I think it was actually Gomez. Gomez comes in, blocks it. They Inter Miami go right down the other way. DC, to their credit, does a pretty good job of sort of checking back. I almost kind of thought, okay, they've killed it. Like, bad giveaway, but they managed to like cover themselves. And, you know, Suarez kind of then turns back, takes a quick glance, sees that Bono is a little bit off his line, and he just plays. I mean, it's only thing you can call it is like a world-class chip. Just enough to put Bono off his line where he can't quite get to it. And it trickles into the back of the net. I don't think you can blame Bono for that. I think, you know, obviously Click gets the majority of the blame for the giveaway. You know, either way, it's 3-1. And at that point, I think you kind of knew this game was over. It was basically done and dusted. DC just doesn't have the depth. Quality matters. And, you know, Inter Miami clearly have it. And this is, I think the fact that they were able to come into DC, put out a roster without, you know, without a lot of their biggest names, and they managed to, you know, 20, 25 minutes looked out match, but then managed to wrestle it back. This is a team, I think, that will leave this game knowing that they have a formula or an idea of what they want to do when Messi can't be there. And I think that makes them exponentially more dangerous.
They had only won 3 from 8 before that without him on the field. And now it's 4 out of 9. I want to talk about some individual performances and get your takes on them. So Alex Bono, FootMob has this as his worst game of the season, worse than the Portland Timbers game. Negative goals prevented at negative 1.2, 4 saves, but 3 goals conceded, 1.8 X got. So they overweight the goals actually scored versus how many should gone in. Do those numbers sound right to you, or do you think this is a little incorrect? Is this his worst game?
I wouldn't call it his worst game. Sure, maybe he gives it the most goals. I can't really remember like a tragic game that he's had.
Timbers was the second lowest, and those were 2 balls that were sort of at him, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think you can look at this and say this was his fault. He had a fantastic save. I think eventually it led to a goal, but he's shown he can make some good saves in this for this team. I don't think you put any blame on him. I think we also
saw yellow card accumulation being a problem in the first half. Herrera got a yellow card. McVay got a yellow card. I think Pirani got a yellow card. So there was 3 DC United yellow cards in the first half, which was a problem you could see because the amount of transition opportunities Miami was getting, that was their entire offense. They were able to spring that cross field ball, and DC United were scrambling. And it's one of those things from a tactic perspective where you look at it and you say, this continues to happen. This is happening over and over and over again. What can we do at halftime to keep this from happening? And maybe the answer was nothing. Maybe this was just the way that the players were set up. There wasn't much to be done.
I think that first 15 minutes gave a key into what they could do. I think once they came out of the second half, they slotted Peltola a little bit back. So he was kind of more trying to cover less ground. I think maybe they pushed Click a little bit further up. I think you saw them kind of develop a strategy where they weren't, you know, they were more concerned about covering and getting back. Peltola was much more involved. I think he had a kind of a key block in there. Maybe they would secede the wide angles, but they would sort of stay compact defensively. And then, you know, then they can sort of turn it back the other way on the break. So I think we saw a sign of that. I think against, you know, some lesser opponents, that might be a recipe for success. I think you're still going to see this team press, and I think we'll see them press next week. Yeah, so I think we saw some glimpses of that, of how they can maybe play without having to sort of press the game to death.
All right, well, let's talk about how they're going to play without a left back next week.
Yeah, we saw...
Are you eager to fuel the growth of soccer in the U.S. while showcasing your passion for the sport? Look no further than Pitch Invaders, the ultimate online apparel destination tailored for the soccer community. Based in Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders offers a dynamic range of casual and athletic gear designed to let you express your love for the game both on and off the pitch. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about trendy merch, it's a movement. They proudly partner with local soccer clubs and associations, actively contributing to the growth and expansion of the sport across the U.S. Community is at the heart of everything that they do. As a special treat for our podcast listeners, use code VAMOS for an exclusive 15% discount on all purchases at pitchinvadersusa.com. By supporting Pitch Invaders, you're not just showing your love for soccer, you're also backing a brand committed to fostering community and making a difference in the sport. Don't miss out on this opportunity to rep your love for soccer, support the community, and look absolutely fantastic while doing it. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com today and join us in proclaiming that the pitch is for the people.
Yeah, we saw Santos, who, I mean, I feel like he has solved a lot of his defensive woes from previous seasons. I don't recall him having too many moments where he got caught out. If anything, I feel like the right side with Herrera, Herrera was the one maybe getting caught a little bit on this team defensively. But I mean, I thought the Santos had, I think he had a really, I can't remember, it was like the first half where the ball kind of comes in and he kind of does this really like deft little touch sort of back over the defense and kind of neutralizes the situation. It was kind of a cool moment, but he doesn't cover himself in glory. Takes down an on-rushing attacker, probably preventing a fourth goal, but earning himself a straight red card for denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity. I thought the call was a little bit harsh. I think there was a tracking back defender, but you know, I don't think there's too much argument you can have for that.
His foot mob ratings from the season started at 8, 7.5, 6.6, 6.1. Obviously the red card's going to wipe your score out.
Again, I really do not put much. I've stopped putting much faith in football ratings, but you go right ahead. I guess.
Listen, you look at football manager ratings and talk about new players. So I think at least we're going to talk about
at least those are guys that are scouted. I mean, they're giving him a knock because of the red card. And
yeah, I just said that. If you look at the rest of his metrics are pretty good for how he normally does. Mm-hmm. They're actually very good. So that was probably too much of a ding for that. Either way, he's not going to be here next week. And DC United, if you look at their bench, doesn't really have a natural fit. We have one, of course, but he is forever banned from playing because he's sad all the time or whatever's going on.
We'll see if that changes. I don't know, man.
Yeah, all of a sudden, it appears that he's actually ready to play.
By the way, going to be an international break. Matea Caboni will be gone. Christian Fletcher will be gone. They'll be at USU U19s. Aaron Herrera will be with Guatemala. And Matti Petola will be with Finland.
That's for this upcoming weekend?
Yes.
Oh, boy, we get to play Make a Lineup. That's wild. Okay. Well, yeah. That's interesting.
Connor Antley. My guess is Connor Antley out left, Dahomey out right. That's my.
You mean Dahomey out left? He plays left back.
Oh, he plays left. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's switch it. Sorry.
Antley's probably a more of a Swiss Army knife across the back. So that would make sense, I guess. So then you put Jacob Merrill up top with Christian Benteke.
I mean, you got to hope Tecudi Pietro is healthy.
There. That's right. That would
be
I would say let's get Pirani out of there. Put TKD as a 10. Give Merle a run out and see how it goes. And then swap him. And then Pirani could be a second half sub. TKD could go up the front if Merle cannot hack it. That's what I'd like. But then this game, you and I should make sure that our phones are charged because they might give us a call because it's going to be really gnarly.
Maybe. I think that would be. I'll be curious to see if they get any sort of loan ups from Loudoun United, or they try to maybe we've heard they are looking to sign I think we saw one of their academy kids whose name I can't remember right now, but I know he's been rumored to be signed.
I bet you see Canales and Birnbaum on the bench this weekend just for the numbers.
Yeah, possibly.
Canales actually could play. Canales has been in full training from what I understand. So
yeah, and you might have to start. We'll see what the lineup's going to look like, guys.
It's going to be so bad. Hilarious.
Yeah. And they just loaned Jeremy Gray out to El Paso. So
Hayden Sargis hanging out in Las Vegas and laughing at what they're trying to figure out. Boy.
this might be a rough game, folks, before we welcome Montreal into town. So just be aware of that. I think if this team can walk away with a draw in this game, I think I would be extremely happy. Maybe we can borrow Durkin for a game.
it's like a half and half tribute match. He's got to play. DC can play right back for us one more time.
Yeah.
His favorite position.
We'll see what they do. I think there'll be one sort of surprise or possibly any type of shift in formation. So we'll see how it goes. MLS, maybe stop playing during international breaks.
Please. Why do you hate us and everyone else and the game in general? But they have I want to look real quick. I want to look at who the bench will be made up of if they can't do that. I have to see the whole club. Let's see real quick. I think it's interesting. So Antley will be there. Bartlett will be there. Benteke, Birnbaum, maybe. Canales, Dahomey. Mm-hmm. Not Herrera, not Garay. Hopkins, not Jazz. Click, DKD maybe if he's healthy, McVay, Merle, Poltola. It's basically everybody left on the roster will be in the 18. Maybe Tubbs. Is he healthy yet? Is he
maybe he picked up another injury. Yeah, so he was listed as out in the last injury report. So yeah,
I think it's because he put a hex on himself with all that social media behavior before they right after he got traded.
Maybe
this roster is really once they made those loans out, like they're really getting thin at the bottom of that rank. So that's just not interesting. Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I don't know. Maybe there'll be some sort of signing or trade or something to come into this team. This team still does, you know. Maybe,
I'm making my Jackson Hopkins first half shot bet again. That's what I'm doing. I'm doubling down. I'm going double or nothing.
It might happen. All right. I think that's gonna kind of wrap it up. I don't think we have too much to say.
We'll have midweek sort of St. Louis preview either. We'll probably have somebody on the Patreon show, by the way. Reminder, patreon.com/RFK refugees. You get Andy Sullivan interviews first. You get our preview of the Inter Miami game. It's where you want to be. So I'm sure we'll do something there. Ted normally gets the away duty. He'll join the away podcasters so that we're converting new fans in St. Louis. And also make sure you're checking the website because we're trying to put as much up on a print basis as possible. This week was a little bit rough again because Ted was man in the store by himself. So we're going to be back to normal here this week.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's shift gears. Let's talk Spirit. Washington Spirit opened up their season and we got a first glimpse of what the new look Spirit will be. And boy, what was it? Was it something? They certainly tried to play a game of soccer.
They started that game real well, real fast, yeah, real well.
Real well. So the opening kickoff, rain go immediately down the throat of the Washington Spirit and draw a PK. Looking back at the replay, which, by the way, a bit of a rough start for Monumental, of course, watching the game. I was watching that on my...
probably, right? I think that's a bit of a...
Yeah, no score bug for, I'd say, most of the first half. I think eventually they figured it out. Audio was a little funky. Quality of the it really made it hard for me to. The camera was very far out, and it really made it difficult to tell the players and the numbers.
A bad stream is almost unwatchable. I think because you're so used to good streams, when you watch a bad stream, like your brain is like, do anything else.
Yeah,
do anything else other than this. And I want, before we get into the game, really, I want to talk about the lineups. I think I don't think I expected so many first year players in this lineup to start. I don't think anybody did. Kingsbury and Nett expected, although that's something to take a look at for Saturday.
Yeah.
Kate Wiesner starts her first game. Casey Kruger starts her first game as a Spirit player
at center back,
which was talked about when they were signed. She has the versatility. Gabby Carl, Hal Hirschfeld getting her first start, and also apparently found out this week she's the fifth listed captain for the Spirit. So that is a rookie. And a player that Andy Sullivan talked a lot about in our interview, how much she thought she was great, plays and starts. Andy Sullivan, obviously, Croy Bethune, again, a player that is needed to step up and be that 10 in the absence. Well, not the literal 10, because folks, number 10 is absent on the Spirit. There's no number 10. So I wonder why that is. Uli Montasar, Ashley Hatch, and then Brittany Ratcliffe, another offseason signing. So they went right for it. And if you look at the subs on the bench, players not used, Anna Helferty, Paige Mateer, Chloe Ricketts, Lena Solano, and Heather Stainbrook. So all of the experienced players that you thought might have been the first off the bench, none of them got used. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I think we saw a glimpse, and I think there's a lot of upset fans right now. The Spirit did not cover themselves in glory. Did not play well. They gave up, of course, the PK early on, right off the jump. They were under constant pressure. I thought Wiesner in particular struggled a lot. The attacks were basically coming entirely down her side of the field. And you know, could
She's
not
a rookie.
Really...
That's not really, I mean, that can happen, right? That's,
yeah,
that you're gonna get targeted out of those three.
Yeah. Those I think based on the lineup, based on everything we're seeing, I think fans will probably need to have some patience. And you know what? I don't blame them if they don't have patience. Because I think a lot of us feel like this team should be better. Like this team should be, you know, I think we all got you know, spoiled with that 2021 championship. I talked a lot about it in my preview. Like, if you had told fans this was going to be the state of the team, you know, two missed playoffs, a bottom wooden spoon in 2022, I think a lot of people would have called you crazy, because it really felt like the 2021 season was sort of the building block. And I think this team is now in sort of a pretty much a rebuild. They may not say it, but it is what it is right now. They've traded away a lot of the assets are gone. They basically just have really, you know, Kingsbury, Trinity Rodman, and Ashley Hatch. You know, maybe Terry McKeown counts, but she's playing a new role, like, from that 2021 team. Andy Sullivan. So, you know, I think it'll be better. It'll be better once Trinity Rodman's back in the lineup. She was obviously suspended.
She was at the watch event, which is cool. People enjoyed that.
They advertised the watch event, and I was like, wow, you guys are really like showing your cards that I guess Trinity Rodman's maybe not, you know, healthy or not ready to go. And then I was reminded, and then I remembered, oh yeah, it's because she's suspended from
the last game. Whole last game thing that was fun to be at for sure.
Yeah, it was fun to watch too. I think things will be better. Obviously, I think the main storyline for this game, the Spirit generated, be 0.0. I've seen 0.04 and 0.03 expected goals, and
the lowest in any NWSL match since 2016. Is that what it said?
Yeah, I believe so. Ooh. And watching that game, it incredibly disjointed for most of the game. Incredibly, just not. Just didn't look like things were together. They are definitely changing. This is a different style. This is a team that is going to be slow, methodical buildup, you know, short passes. They're going to not be as sort of quick on the break. I wonder how that's going to suit a player like Trinity Rodman, who loves to sort of, you know, run, go quickly and has scored a lot of goals on the break. I think it's going to be an adjustment for her.
She can also take players on, though. That is another one of us. So I think that she can do it all. She's, you know, super talented. So not all players can do both things as well as she can do, probably.
Yeah. And I think that might be the case. But it's going to be a different style. I think this is a team that is going to need to learn how to play with each other. You know, a few preseason games, probably not enough time to really have all of it together and to play in a style that, you know, is conducive, or to play well in a style that is conducive to the way they want to play. So, I think it could be a little bit of a rough sailing for the first, you know, 5-6 weeks. And I think they are using the fact that they don't have the permanent coach in to do sort of a rebuild. And, you know, there's a lot of anger at Mark Kerkorian right now going amongst the fan base. I think it's fair. I think there's a lot of questions about sort of how this team looks and how they're playing right now.
I feel like this could very much be the Terry McKeown to center back moment of 2024. I believe there's going to be major roster moves in the summer. Mm-hmm. They've teased as much. And the first half of the season is going to be about getting these young players enough minutes to realize who they might be, to get the style of play ready to go, so that when you can plug in players that are already playing that style, potentially from Barcelona in the summer, and because NWSL season is kind of ridiculous and almost the entire league makes the playoffs, despite the fact that the Spirit have not the last 2 years, putting that aside, it'd be very possible for them to turn it on at the end of the year and sneak in and then be a problem in the playoffs. So just make sure no one saves your tweets at the beginning of the year saying how Michelle Kang doesn't care about winning, or Mark Kerkorian should be run out of town on a rail. He might, and she might not. But I think that you're going to see a different team in the summer, just because if you look at this roster, it can't compete the way it's currently constructed. Just on a manpower level, I don't think it's a competitor to the top of the league. And if it's about rebuilding, that's fine. I just don't necessarily understand why. I don't understand the salary cap situation as maybe as well as I need to, because they keep signing. They just signed Sanchez to a 3-year deal before they moved her. Ashley Hatch just signed a 3-year deal. Andy mm-hmm. Sullivan signed a 3-year deal last year. Kingsbury signed an extension. So I don't know if they put themselves in a box that way, but I feel like I think that these moves at the beginning of the season created some salary room for them to bring in heavy hitters in the summer. That's the only thing that makes sense. That's the only explanation for this starting 11 at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I think they have kind of, and you know what? I've kind of thought about this. I think you know, I think we looked at this team winning the 2021 championship, and I feel like we kind of all, you know, we all kind of looked at it and maybe made excuses in our heads. You know, we talked about, you know, well, 2022, it seems like there was maybe a bad coaching situation that deteriorated. They got thrown through the ringer in the early part of the schedule. That kind of killed them. Then there was, you know, I believe that was an Olympic year? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah. The Olympics, I thought, might have been delayed. But no, maybe it was an Olympic year. But, you know, I think it was a, you know, it was a stressful time. And 2023, the late season collapse. But, I mean, I would say 2023, I have kind of re-gone back in my head about that year. And I have decided that there was no excuse. This team had numerous chances and numerous opportunities where they could have put themselves in a position to be in the playoffs, to be near the top of the league. They started the season extremely well. I feel like there was no excuse for how that season ended. I know they had players go away for World Cup. They had a lot of missing bodies, but there really, in my opinion, was no excuse. They should have made the playoffs that year. And I think maybe we've kind of sold ourselves after that 2021 season that everything's fine. And maybe this is something that's needed to, you know, cut some of the fat, get some new bodies in there. We're going to be playing in a completely different style, I think, to what we've seen this team play in the past. So I remain still optimistic. I think once the coach gets in, probably going to pick up a Barcelona player or two would be my guess. I think there's also going to be some more moves. And you know, one player I want to talk about is Sarr. We've talked about this in the chat. I really don't know what coaches see in her. She doesn't create her own chance. She's not really getting on the end of many chances. I think she is a part of the reason the XG is so low, is because she really doesn't put herself in good places to really generate some chances or make runs that, you know, Bethune can maybe find a pass for.
She was 50% in passes out of 20. She had four touches in the opposition box, three passes into the final third, 25% ground duels, just a non-factor. I think you're gonna between Sarr and Ratcliffe, one of those players is gonna sit when Trinity's back, quite obviously. Yeah. And then it's just a question of who. And they're gonna probably cycle around until they find that other winger. Sarr has some rope, I think. I believe both Sarr and Boutel were Parsons signings. I don't know. I'm sure Corian obviously has his hands on all the moves, but I think that those were players identified by Parsons due to his European connection. So keep that in mind for what, you know, Sarr has had very, to my mind, some fleeting moments of like some individual brilliance, but as far as a team dynamic fitting into the way the team wants to play, I've not seen her put it together for 90 in one game, let alone in a series of games. But this is her chance. Like early in the season, obviously, like we just said, they're giving young players opportunities, and they're going to give other players opportunities to see whether they fit in or not. But let's talk about, we want to talk about the flashpoints, or at least the major one, the red card at the end of the game that you talked about it pretty extensively on social.
Yeah, well, let's start with, you know, the Spirit did get a goal out of this game. It was called back. Bethune kind of holding on up to the keeper. I think that had to be the moment that they were talking about. She's very clearly sort of playing the keeper. I do question a little bit. I'm like, you know, the keeper is also like twice her size. She's like the smallest player on the field. So she kind of makes a meal out of it. It's a really, really great ball. I believe it's, was it Sullivan on the cross? I can't remember who exactly played it in. But it was a really nice ball. And Casey Krueger as well, I want to call out. She sort of shifted back. Part of the reason I'm maybe a little frustrated with her being at center back is, as soon as, you know, again, they still did not generate too many chances, but it was like as soon as she shifted out to the left and then Gabby Carl switched out to the right, Casey Krueger suddenly was getting involved in the attack. The team looked a lot more dangerous. They were able to sort of switch the ball. She was able to sort of, you know, force the rain to sort of have to play wide. And it opened up some channels and it opened up some opportunities for other players. And she gets what could have been the tying goal. And maybe we're talking a little bit more sweetly about this game. Maybe that's not, I don't know how that's factored into the XG. If that goal actually counts, maybe that raises it a little bit. But Bethune is holding up the keeper. it's a rough call, but I think at the end of the day, I don't know how much you can really argue with it. It's very clear that she is sort of grabbing onto the keeper, kind of preventing the keeper from getting to the ball. It's a really, you know, powerful towering header by Casey Krueger, but unfortunately goes to VAR and then is called back. The next sort of flashpoint in the game, it's a ball over the top. You know, you have Rain, you know, Rain player chasing, and you have Terry McKeown also chasing. Kingsbury gets out to the edge of the box. Ball's kind of coming to her. She kind of like catches the ball and then tries to like move it down onto the line. It ends up going to VAR. I thought this was an incredible. First of all, I thought it's ridiculous. Like, you look at the video, and I do not know how you can discern beyond a reasonable doubt that there's not at least part of the ball, because that's all you need. You need just part of the ball touching the line, and that is considered in the box. That is how it works. It's the same sort of concept as if the ball is in play or out of play based on where the ball is and if it is completely over the line. I do not know how she can discern from that video that there's not at least part of the ball touching the line. I think what to me is interesting is that she seems to catch the ball inbounds, maybe has to, like, you know, then sort of, you know, move out to grab it and then sort of bring it down. I thought it was a completely tough call. She takes, I think, about 10 minutes to take a look at it. What are we doing here if we're having to take this long to look at a call and then suddenly know it's obvious? Again, I don't know. I don't think all of the aspects. I will be curious to see if the Spirit try to appeal this one and argue that there are not all. This shouldn't have even been reviewed, because Terry McKeown is tracking back. She's second nearest to the ball from the attacker. And it's very clear to me that there is no denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity there. I'll be curious to see if there's any sort of this week in VAR or any sort of explanation from the referees. I think if I'm, you know, Mark Kerkorian and Adrian Gonzalez, I look to appeal that and see, you know, give it a shot, because I think it was an incredibly harsh call for a number of reasons. And I think the referee screwed up with the fact that they missed that. Maybe the ball, she handled the ball outside the box. And then once they reviewed it and saw it, they're like, well, we got to give the red because that's what we do. But
there's no cost in appealing, right? There's not the her it does not get extended, does it?
There's no cost. I think you do have a limited number of times you can do it. Like, you can't just appeal.
Right.
You get, like, I think one appeal.
I would appeal because the drop off is going to be pretty stiff from Kingsbury to potentially Bosselman if she's the keeper that you might look at. I don't know, maybe not, but they didn't receive so many red cards last year that you think you got to make sure that you don't waste it early on in the year.
It's early in the year as well, so they might just say, we'll just, you know, we'll pass on this one. And, you know, it's not, you know, it's
who do you think they give the start to if that's the case for the home opener? Do they give it to the young Bosselman, or do they put Barney out there?
I think you got to give it. If they put Bosselman out there, they put her on the bench. Got to think she's the one that
gets her go. Maybe, yeah. So.
And I think also it's a case too. It's early in the season. Let's see what you got in the young keeper as well.
Just gave an extension to. So
yeah. So
give her a shot.
I think that's what you do. Again, it's early. I we'll see what they do. I think there's an argument for them to maybe win that appeal, but they might not see it as worthwhile if they see something maybe come up down the road when, you know, they get to the business end of the season. So they might just say, we'll pass on it. No guarantee too. I mean, they might come up with an explanation about it, but, you know, the laws of the game don't state anything about, you know, the keeper handling outside the box is an automatic red. There's very clear stipulations, and I don't think they were met in this case.
Did you happen to catch any other NWSL action around the weekend?
I watched a little bit. It was kind of in between MLS and some other things.
Watch the current Thorns game, 5-4 final. That was on terrestrial TV. So NWSL, congrats to you. You had a goal fest. That was a pretty wild one. I suggest that. And then North Carolina leading the league with a 4-goal differential after one game, slapping the Houston Dash 5-1 at home. In front of 5,800 people, which was not enough for Sean Nahas. He was mad. They should be selling out, he said. But that team did the business. I'm very, very interested to see, again, looking at where the Spirit sort of find themselves early on in the season from a roster perspective, and then looking at everybody else. You know, Gotham did not play, obviously, because they were recovering from the off.
Gotham and San Diego Wave played. I did watch some of the Challenge Cup.
That was interesting too.
Yeah, that wasn't really not that exciting of a game. No. You know,
but great. What was good was the Amazon Prime presentation of that game.
Oh yeah.
Very good. The video quality compare. I mean, not even fair to compare that to Monumental, but just compare that to a normal stream on NWSL, and it was amazing. I wish they had every game. I will be watching the Friday Prime matchup, whatever's on.
Yep. And I think the Spirit is the home opener. Is that on
Saturday?
Saturday, is that on ION? Is that on ESPN, or is it just on still on Monumental?
Sit over my shoulder.
What's that?
I said, sit over my shoulder and watch. Bay FC, by the way, wins their first game as a club on a golazo, on a golazo by their world record signing, Oshola. Just Angel City, who just are getting sold, I believe. I think they either have been sold or they're going to be sold, just like San Diego Wave, which is weird to have happen in the first week of the season. But so they're coming off of a victory. We'll see how that goes coming in on Saturday. We'll have some previews there as well.
Yeah, and this game will actually be on ION.
There you go. So point your HD antenna towards the sun, or whatever you do with an HD antenna, so you can watch that game.
Yeah. A lot of people expressing some frustration, I guess, about the opening week, about the sort of stratified television. I feel like this is always something that I think it's great that it seems like most teams, I think, have local deals that can kind of cover the rest of the games. I think that's good. Of course, they're also for free on, you know, NWSL Plus, but, you know, I like to watch the games on my TV. So it's a nice option to have. You know, we kind of talk about this first weekend. Are you pro this streaming, or do you kind of like the everything sort of on one network or one streaming service?
I don't. I think they need to have some sort of a uniformity on the level of quality between the streams. Once you get there, and I bet it's, you know, maybe it's opening weekend challenges or something, then I think it's not a big problem. But when one of the providers is going to blast the other ones out of the water, and you're just going to want all of those games to go to that one, that makes this whole dance a little bit kind of ridiculous. But I think it was I forget who said it on Twitter, but there was like, this is an unfortunate externality of the fact that NWSL got $60 million. They were always going to take that, and this is we're going to just have to deal with it. I bet it gets better over time, both for fans. I bet we hear less complaints over time, and also the quality improves. But Monumental, answer your phone, answer the courtesy phone, and figure out how to get a score bug up there at the very least.
I think they got it. I think first I'm going to give them a mulligan on the first game. So,
all right, we'll see how they are. I'll be curious.
I'll be curious to see the ION stream. I think that'll be something to watch this weekend, to see how they handle that. So, all right, folks, I think that is going to do it for this episode of the RFK Refugees podcast. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Check us out at rfkrefugees.com. Like I said, we'll have some midday content come up. We'll probably get the previews and the review content. So hope you guys have been enjoying that. If you think like the quality is dropping off, I had to write 4 different blog posts this week. So I'm doing.
No one's complaining, Ted. They're happy it exists.
Happy it exists. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, patreon.com. Check us out, and we will catch you guys on next Monday. Vamos.